All of the spiritual practices that one does primarily are designed to help release you from the tyranny of your own analytic mind. Sometimes you use the mind to beat the mind. Sometimes you do it through devotion. Sometimes you do it through working with energies like breath and so on. And the minute you break the identification with your thought, it's as if you come into a quality of awareness that also, besides the quality that it has of presence and clarity about the universe around you, or in you, or you, there is also a quality that is very soft in it. And it, I focus for that, or I see that as what's called in Chinese the Sin-Sin, H-S-I-N, Sin-Sin, the heart-mind. It's the intuitive heart. It's not the emotional heart. It is the like the doorway into that other realm where you are not separate. Like the quality of our emotional heart is like a doorway into that. You notice how with your heart goes out to people. My heart goes out to you is an expression. You give away anything. Take my car, take my house, take it all, the heart says. The mind keeps saying, now, wait a minute. Because the mind is protecting your separateness while the heart is giving it all away, always. And the interesting situation is that we all have these incredibly compassionate hearts that are like, they are the quality of love, the quality of boundaryless, soft, merging presence. But most of us armor our hearts with our mind, with our thought. And the only thing that we're involved in at this moment in our practices then is breaking down that armor so that that intuitive heart can function, because we've cut ourselves off from it by our mind armoring us. And when we do that, we end up feeling starved, because it's through that intuitive heart that we actually get fed by the universe. It's like an umbilical cord of stuff that comes into us. And when we cut it off with the mind, we end up feeling very alienated and very starved. And that's why we're always so greedy. We keep wanting more of everything because we're always trying to fulfill a hunger in us, and the hunger is created by the way in which we've made ourselves, reinforced our own separateness from it all. And you can see all the pathology in the way we've gotten rid of the extended family, and we've gotten the mobility. We've taught about external freedom, meaning you don't have to be attached to anything. And the cost is incredible. The paradoxes that I've been working with, some of them revolve around the issue of suffering and pain. See, most of us, with your mind, because your mind lives, deals with polarities, you feel that if you're happy, you're not sad. And you want to be happy, so you push away that which makes you sad. I've described the image in many lectures of standing in Marin County with a frisbee, about to throw a frisbee. And through my mind went the inscription over Gandhi's tomb, which says, "Think of the poorest person you have ever seen and ask whether your next act will be of any use." See, do you throw the frisbee or don't you? That's the issue of an affluent culture. Can you not throw the frisbee because the fact that a baby's dying every 45 seconds? But if you don't ever throw the frisbee, what is it you're offering the baby? I mean, how do you hear how to deal with suffering. And I've begun to understand that what is required is that we expand ourselves to embrace all of the planes of consciousness simultaneously for true compassion to arise. If you alter your consciousness sufficiently so that you're standing at the cusp between form and formless, right at the edge, and you look out at form, you are absolutely awed by the beauty, the exquisiteness, the awesome nature of the way in which forms are all related lawfully. Plato refers to that. He talks about seeing the law and praising God as the law. He said, but in order to do that, you can't be identified with your own suffering or your own pleasure, or you don't see it. It's the same thing the Tao says when it says, truth waits for eyes unclouded by longing. If you want something or if you're pushing something away, you don't see this beauty. It's only when you develop a certain equanimity and a certain emptiness inside, when you're right at the edge of the formless, that you look at the forms and you see the law, and it is so beautiful. I mean, we see it in all these little microcosms. We see it in physics and astronomy, and the way in which a cell structure is related to the way the planets work, and the lawful nature of music and art, and it is... And you look and you see that your own thinking mind is part of that law. And it's all unfolding in a purely lawful way. And then you look and you see that the suffering in the universe, if you stand back far enough, that the suffering is part of the law. There are, from where I'm sitting, when I'm sitting in that place, there are no errors in the universe, not one. That where you are at this moment, with all your thesaurus, with all your problems, with all the things of your, all your if-onlys, just where you are at this moment is the absolutely optimum place you are to be at this moment from a spiritual point of view for your optimum growth. And the statement in you, I should be more like the Buddha or the Christ, or I wish I was there, or I should be meditating more, or all that, that's all part of the perfection. And you look and you see that the way in which suffering works, in the way it works from a spiritual point of view, but then when you identify with your humanness, with your separateness, with your emotional heart, suffering stinks. And when you look at the pain of another human being, it wipes you out because you empathize with it. And you feel so horrible about their pain. And you would do anything to take it away. And the problem is there's so much of it. I mean, there's battered mothers and battered children, and there's starving beings, and there's blind people, and there's whales that are going extinct, and there's seals, and there's trees, and there's... Where do you begin? You just got to look in a mirror. There's suffering right there. And it's so much for the human heart that the human heart armors itself with the mind. And you become what's known in the service industry, in the caring industry, as professionally warm. You are kind in a way that doesn't hurt your heart. You're caring. Like if you're a nurse working in an ICU ward, and you're dealing with pain and fear and suffering and death, most of those people become very kind and warm and friendly and caring, but they are protecting. They have cut off their own hearts because they feel they would break otherwise. And they got to save something for home. But if you are going to be free, there's nothing you can turn away from or turn off. And how do you keep your heart open in hell? Becomes the interesting question.